Today's Teisho will be on case 26 in the Book of Serenity. Yang Shan points to snow. Introduction. Ice and frost are one color. Snow and moon merge their light. Freezing the reality body to death, purifying the fisherman to the extreme. Is there anyone who can appreciate? Case. Yang Shan pointed to a snow lion and said, is there any that can go beyond this color? Yunmen said, at that point, I'd have pushed it over for him. Zhuedu said, he only knows how to push down. He doesn't know how to help up. Verse. One knocks down, one sets up. The lion in the snowy garden. Careful about transgression, he demonstrates benevolence. Courageous in action, he sees his duty. Pure light shining in the eyes is like being lost from home. Turning around in clear purity is, after all, to fall into that state. Patch-robed mendicants ultimately have nothing to rely on. Dying the same, born the same. Which is this, and which is that? News of warmth bursts the plum. Spring comes to the cold branches. A freezing gale makes the leaves drop. Autumn clarifies the runoff water. I want to thank everybody for coming here on this beautiful day. This real fall has really come. It's the temperature's dropping. We've had the rains of fall. The leaves are beginning to turn. And it's just wonderful to practice when fall's coming on. Very exciting. I love this season. I'm sure everybody does. And somehow when I do zazen and get up and leave this room and go outside, it all seems so much closer to me. It all seems so much more alive and more, I feel more connected with it. So there's just something about this practice which makes that possible. And I hope you have that experience today when you leave the Zendo and go outside. But I thank you all for coming here on a Saturday morning. There are so many things people can do with their time, but you came here to practice Zen. And that's really wonderful. So today's koan is on this case. Yang Shan pointed to a snow lion and said, is there anything that can go beyond this color? Well, it might be important to understand that snow lion is a very lightly colored animal. Something like an American bobcat, a little bit bigger than an American bobcat, but much closer to a white color. And really, the snow lion in its element is so well adapted that you can hardly distinguish it from snow. It's not as white as a polar bear, but it's quite white. So Yang Shan points to a snow lion and says, is there anything that can go beyond this color? Now, you should also understand, maybe to appreciate the koan, that often enlightened mind is symbolized in Buddhist literature as being like snow, or like the moon, the full moon. When Lord Buddha was asked to describe enlightened mind. He said it's like a white cloth. There's a whole tradition in Buddhist literature and Zen literature of representing enlightened mind as this like the moon or like snow. Enlightened mind is often associated with cold or coolness. When people are coming to sit at the end of a busy day and they sit down on the cushion, their minds are furious with the thoughts and ideas. At first, before you do Zen practice, you don't even notice it. We have had lately a lot of beginners coming to sit on Monday and Friday night. And many of them have never done anything like meditation before. One person came up to me and said, I'm just astounded. My mind was racing. Thoughts were popping in and all of these emotions were unfolding. It was astonishing to me. And people don't normally pay attention to the contents of their mind, but often the mind is in this condition of, like, it's like a bubbling cauldron, right? Or a racing engine. And thoughts are just flying. And emotions are usually attached to these thoughts. And, you know, 1 minute you're thinking, oh my gosh, that report is due next week, and the adrenaline starts pumping, and the next minute you think, oh, you know, I'd like something to eat, and then different sensation comes over. This is like the normal mind. And there's something slightly feverish like about this, you know. It's like a burning fire in a certain way. The truth is, most people don't even notice this. They don't really notice that actually the mind, without any sort of cultivation, is often sort of on the edge of hysteria, really. Really. I mean, I'm sure if you've done a little meditation, you begin to notice that. We sit on the cushion and you suddenly sometimes look with a little bit of surprise at the contents of your mind as they move past your attention. And you realize, that's almost like hysterical. I'm thinking this and having this emotion, and then thinking that and having that emotion, and then this fear arises and this memory. And so the truth is, if you've been practicing for a while and you sit on the cushion, you see this more clearly. It may seem like you're not making any progress, but that's not so. You're just more aware of what's going on. Normal people who don't practice don't even realize what condition their minds are in. When they get angry, they just feel anger. When they're fearful, they're just fearful. If you practice for a while, you begin to distance yourself from your thoughts and your emotions. So you maybe you're sitting on the cushion and something arises in your mind, maybe something that happened long ago, and you may see your anger arise along with it. And the interesting thing is that if you practice, after a while, you don't hold on to your thoughts and you don't hold on to your anger. They don't grip you. They don't occupy the center of your attention. You see the anger and you may even be repelled by it. You may say, oh, I don't want to be angry. Is that in me? Is that anger arising in my heart right now? And then you say, I don't want that there. If you come back to the breath or you come back to mu, the anger or the fear, whatever, it goes away. See, and this is a great accomplishment. Everybody wants to have a totally clear mind, but that's very difficult. It takes a long time, and how long, I will explain in a little bit. But for now, it takes a long time, and it's a major achievement if you just don't hold on to and identify with your thoughts and emotions. When you sit on the cushion sometimes, your mind is producing, there's this flow of thought, and there are these emotions, and you keep coming back to the breath and coming back. And as I say, instead of these thoughts and emotions possessing you, like demonic possession, right? Instead of their possessing you, you see them come and go. See, they come and they go. And you don't hold on and they don't grip you. See, that's a very precious state of consciousness. Very precious and very hard to achieve. It takes a lot of sitting to enter that state. And if you don't keep practicing, you can lose it. You begin to hold on and to your thoughts, or the thoughts begin to possess you again. So if you cultivate your mind, eventually you'll be able to return to this state where the thoughts come and they go, and they don't hold on. They go by like clouds. This is often referred to as lan tian, blue sky, ao zu. Like clouds come and go in the blue sky, but the blue sky is always empty and blue, right? When you're in the blue sky mind, the ao zu, close, right? You know what I mean, blue sky, lan tian. When you're in that mind, see, how do you feel? Cool and refreshed. It's refreshing. See, normal mind is like a burning cauldron. It's like a hot stove. You know, I love to cook, and I love to cook at Sesshin, but I have to tell you, in August, that stove is really hot, you know? And if you even are in the kitchen sometimes, there's a pilot light in the stove. This last August, our Sesshin was pretty cool. The weather was beautiful, but the previous summer was very hot. And I was doing Dokusan once in the kitchen in August, and I just thought, why am I so hot? It's so hot in here. And I realized it was the stove, you know? I was sitting in my robes, just perspiring, just sitting there. So I moved it over one. I moved the mats over away from the stove, and it was a little more comfortable. That feeling is rather unpleasant, right? To be, you know, to be that relentless burning heat, you know. But that's how we live our lives, you know, often, in the relentless burning heat of feverish thoughts and emotions that just sweep us like a stream in which we've lost our footing, you know. So when you begin to do zazen, you begin to do chan, and you begin to focus on the breath or on mu, eventually the thoughts come and go, and you become cool. It's like being, the Buddha actually described it as being cool and refreshed. It's like being in the hot heat of India, 110, 115 degrees, you know, and getting under a tree where it's shady and there's a breeze, and suddenly you're cool and refreshed. It's the most beautiful feeling. Beautiful. So that condition of awareness is often associated in Buddhist literature with coolness or even coldness. You know, enlightened mind, especially in Chinese poetry, Buddhist poetry, is often described as cold. And it's not cold like in the Western sense of like cold-hearted. But it's cold because it's pure. It's free from those burning impediments, that possession by thoughts and emotions, uncontrollably burning us up, you know. So snow is often associated with enlightenment, or frost. There's a very famous Chinese poem that describes a Chan master, a Zen master, in his sitting, and the poem says his robe was covered with frost. See, and this is thought to be a state of mind which is free from obstacles. See, so snow leopard is the creature of the snow, lives in the Himalaya region, in the Bhutan, Tibet, and Western China. And he lives in the snow. That's his element, like a polar bear, right? He's happy in the snow. So this is like somebody who does a lot of zazen, right? You know, the mind, you live your life in that cool spaciousness of deep mushin. And that's where we Zen people live our lives, in that cool spaciousness, see? So snow leopard's a creature of the snow. It lives in the snow. It plays in the snow. That's its joy, is to be free for those obstructions. Right? So the koan basically, Yangshan pointed to a snow lion, snow leopard, and said, is there anything that can go beyond this color? Is there anything more than this beautiful purity? And Yunmen, famous Zen master Cloud Gate, said, at that point, I'd have pushed it over for him. Just push that snow lion over. Okay? Zhuedu said, he only knows how to push down, he doesn't know how to help up. So these koans are just crazy. What is that all about? It's so important to understand what we're doing with our Zen practice. In Zen, people often talk about Dai Kensho, great awakening. See? And the literature of Zen suggests that basically there are these stories in which you have monks or nuns who are struggling to wake up for many, many years, very, very hard. And then they have this wonderful, decisive experience of great awakening, and the, like illumination experience, yeah, illumination experience. And we read those stories, those of us who are interested in Chan or Zen, and we think, oh, I can't wait, right? I can't wait. That is so exciting. I want, oh, I can't wait. People have actually said to me, I just hope I live long enough to have Dai Kensho. That's a good incentive. It's a very good incentive because it is real. It's a real experience, and it's an experience of fundamental reality. It's existentially real, and I believe it's real in a deeper way also. You know, I think it's even empirically. Even though we hold Dai Kensho up as the highest thing, the highest achievement in Zen, it's very important to understand that Dai Kensho isn't actually the goal of Zen meditation. That's actually not. The goal of Zen meditation is to become a Buddha. So that's a more lofty goal than Dai Kensho. As I've said on other occasions, it's not the case in Zen practice that you live in ignorance for 7 years or 12 years or 15 years and boom, you have an enlightenment experience. That's not how it is. Not how it is. Everybody has enlightenment experiences all the time, more or less, in more or less a sustained way, and more or less deeply, more or less shallowly. So the average person who does no sitting gets up one day, goes out of the house, and looks up at the moon, or the moon setting in, as the sun comes up. It's beautiful, right? It's just beautiful. Goes out and looks at the trees turning colors, and in those moments we don't think anything. The mind becomes still, we're absorbed by the moment, often joy arises naturally in our hearts. That's a Kensho experience, that's awakening. That's awakened mind. Often those are accidental and rather fleeting. And they come and they go. In fact, if people didn't have those experiences, they wouldn't do Zen at all, because Zen would make absolutely no sense. I think I got involved in Zen because I used to do backpacking, believe it or not. When I would go hiking, I loved to hike, and I used to go backpacking for a week at a time, you know, or even longer. And backpacking is not so different from Zen. First of all, it's physically very strenuous. You know, usually the pack is like 60 pounds or something like that. And a backpacker might walk 10 or 15 miles a day. So you get up very early in the morning before it gets too hot. You cook a little light breakfast. You hit the trail. You can get about halfway, maybe 7 or 8 miles by lunch. You have a nice lunch, take a little snooze. No. Hit the trail again. By about 4:30, 5 o'clock, you get to your destination for the day. Pitch your tent. Wash your face. Fix dinner. Sit and look at the stars. Beautiful. So, working out, or rather walking on the trail is like working out. It's physically, there's a yoga to hiking. There is. It's a yoga, you know. The hiking yoga, you know. And at the end of it, you feel clean and clear. You feel cool, right? Your body's tired. The mind is still. Everything is very beautiful. Very few thoughts. And I had many experiences where I was just in a connection to the world. I'd look out over the mountains and just think, I wouldn't think anything, right? You don't even think this is beautiful. Just total absorption into the moment. So when I started doing Zen, and I started sitting on the cushion, I was really having some problems in my life with stress and other issues, personal problems. And when I would sit on the cushion, I would have similar experiences. I would get off the cushion and I would feel the same way, even though I didn't consciously reflect on it. I would feel the same way I often felt on the trail, you know, hiking. I think other people have other kinds of experiences of awakened mind in their ordinary lives that bring them to the cushion. And so it's not true that we live in darkness and ignorance, and then suddenly, boom, at the end of it all, there's a Daikensho experience. That's just not how it is. It's all the time we get out of our way a little tiny bit and experience reality as it actually is. That haze of thought is like a form of memory, actually, that we project onto the present and make the present in a certain way, to a certain degree, disappear. And we project into the future and make the present disappear also. And this process is a kind of fantasy. It's kind of fantasy world, actually. Years ago, when I was training in Seattle, I was also going to graduate school when I was doing my Zen training. And I was walking down the street. I just taught my class. It was a beautiful day. In Washington State, if it's a fall day and it's not raining and the sun is out, it's so wonderful because usually it's raining. And it was this day, maybe in November, when the sun was out and it was sort of a warm spell. And I was walking down the street and I ran into a graduate student friend of mine whose name was Virginia Chapel was her name. And she had just come out of a graduate course on modernism and poetry. And she had been reading William Butler Yeats, and she had been reading his poem, The Second Coming, which is about how the modern world is, we're heading straight to doom. It's the hell in a handbasket, right? It's like this monster is coming to destroy the world. That's what the poem is about. The rough beast, so is coming to destroy the world. And Virginia, I saw Virginia, and we came up and talked, and she said, oh my God, you know, the whole world, it's going to hell in a handbasket, and it's all going to be destroyed. And it was like, what are you talking about? You know? Sun is out, it's a beautiful day. It was all in her mind. Right? It was like a spell cast over her mind. It was. And actually, I said, Virginia, look. You know, if we looked up at the sky, it was beautiful. Lan Tian, Bao Zhou, really and truly, literally. And she suddenly realized herself, you know, this was crazy, right? This was all like the spell. Yeats is a great poet, and he cast a spell over her, right, of imagining doom, imagining the end of the world, et cetera, et cetera. This is a fantasy. We do this all the time. We're like enchanters who cast spells on themselves and forget that they're enchanting themselves. And every once in a while, though, you know, we cut through the haze of illusion and we realize that fundamentally, it's Buddha. Fundamentally, it's all this living unity, this beautiful living unity. And as I've said before, you know, even you can say, well, that's easy if it's a sunny day, but I've met people who were on their deathbed who had that kind of connectedness. You know, I've talked before about the fact that I once met a Zen master who was dying of cancer, and he was so serene and so so happy. He was in this beautiful moment. So it's just not the case that we live in ignorance and then boom, Daikensho. It's important to have a goal of awakening. Please realize that awakening goes on all the time, because it's your nature to awaken. See, it's your fundamental nature to awaken. We do it all the time. And when we do it on the cushion, we have a very deep and sustained experience of that. It's really, really special. Because some people have these experiences, and then it's like back to TV, right? You go out, you look at the moon, it's beautiful, you don't think, it's nice, and then you go, okay, I wonder what's on TV. Or you go back to your job, and you get back into the rut of inter-office politics. Or you have a personal relationship that's strained, and you go back into that and relive those emotional traumas over and over again. But, we Zen people have a little different way of life, because instead of having these fleeting moments of awakening, we sort of build our life around these moments. We become sort of servants of this experience. We make this the center of our lives. So it's not like an incidental thing. We make it the core of our lives. Some people make money the core of their lives, right? Some people are interested in power or the respect of others. We Zen people are interested in this experience, these remarkable moments where we're totally connected with the world. And so instead of having these moments casually, you know, here and there as chance would have it, we make ourselves available to that experience. And that's what Zen, that's one way to think about Zen practice, is we're making ourselves available to the universe. And very often, actually, you know, very often, come in and you sit on the cushion and some version of that experience actually happens to you. It may not happen each time the same way. Sometimes you come in and you sit on the cushion and you just think, wow, this is fantastic, you know. That happens. It happens to me. Happens to everybody. I remember years ago there was a young woman who was coming here for a number of years. She eventually moved away, but she had been sitting for about 6 months, and you know, just not much was happening. I don't know why she kept coming back. But one day I said, "How was your sit?" And she had this. Her face was radiant, and she said, "Wow, wow." There was another guy who was sitting here. And he too, his face was just like radiant. I said, "How was your sit?" And he said, "That was better than sex." And indeed. So this happens to people, but it doesn't always happen that way. You know, sometimes it's just, you get on the cushion and it's the burning cauldron of thoughts and emotions, or the roaring engine. And you think, well, not much has happened. But you get off the cushion and suddenly you realize, gee, I'm so relaxed. I feel so much better. And that's another version of the same experience. So it isn't true that we're all sitting on the cushion waiting for enlightenment to come. If that's sort of your mindset, that's not necessarily the way you should think about Zen practice. Enlightenment isn't a personal achievement. It's reality. And we have experiences of that reality every once in a while if we make ourselves available to it. And making ourselves available to it means sitting, coming and sitting, just like you're doing this morning. it also means living a certain kind of life, right? You try to be thoughtful of others, helpful. You try not to indulge in slander and anger, make a habit out of anger. You try to be honest with others and loving with those people you're closely involved with. It would be good if you were nonviolent. If you wanted to be a vegetarian, that would be good. If you refrain from drugs, that would be a huge plus, right? Probably if you use any kind of mind-altering drugs, your situation in the world of Zen is hopeless. So, you know, please don't use any at all unless they're medically prescribed. Those are different. But if you're using recreational drugs, please stop immediately. And actually, it would be better if you didn't drink. You don't have to stop, but it would be better if you didn't drink. Eventually, you know, I swear to you, if you serve enlightened mind will help you in a lot of different ways, you know. In other words, if you make yourself, you make yourself truly available, lightning will strike more often. If you come to sit once a month, you might have a great sit once a year. Yeah, that's how it is, right? If you come to sit every week, you might have a couple of sits like that every 6 months or every 4 months. You sit regularly, you have a lot of those experiences. And you sit once a month, and if you decide to come to Sesshin, brother, it's murder, right? Murder. You sit often, many times during a week, you come to Sesshin, it's not so hard. And you come to a lot of Sesshin, sooner or later, I swear to you, I swear, it will be heaven itself. It will be every sound, every sensation, every moment will be as sweet as sugar. So help me. I swear to you. Now, I've been doing Sesshin for 30 years. Why? You know? It's just like that. It's like there's a diamond clarity in every moment. Pure, stainless, spotless life. It's just unbelievable. So more you make yourself available to this experience, the more it happens. And the more it happens, in my opinion, the happier you're going to be. More it happens, the easier it is to walk this path without any hesitation or doubt. It's just beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Buddha said, this is beautiful at the beginning, beautiful in the middle, beautiful at the end. And so please don't think too much about Daikensho as the ultimate goal, because it's Kensho, 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 all the way, all the way. This is quite important. You can really poison your practice if you think that every time you get on the cushion, you think, gee, darn it, I didn't have Daikensho, you know, what a bummer. You know? Or you come to Sesshin and you think, another Sesshin where I haven't had Daikensho. Ah, what a I'm a Zen failure, right? Now, this is a big mistake. You know, big mistake. If you sit on the cushion and you feel that beautiful coolness, all your troubles go away. And you'll feel that sense of Lan Tian, out of blue sky. This is Buddha itself. Be so grateful for that experience. That is Kensho. I'm not telling you something that's not true. It is Buddha. It is enlightenment. Now, often, unfortunately, we have mental habits that prevent us from remaining in that state very long because we haven't made ourselves available to it often enough. But if you just keep making yourself available to it, it will come more and more often and more deeply. Absolutely so. Okay. So please don't think of Kensho as very distant experience. Happens all the time to everyone. And we Zen people have chosen to make it the center of our lives. Not as something we're pursuing in the distant future, but as something that's happening all the time, to various degrees. It's not the case that Kensho is far away. It's here all the time. Our mental confusion prevents us sometimes from experiencing it. But it's here all the time. However, there's another misconception about enlightenment also. And some people think that when they have had Daikensho, they're now Buddha. Right? Buddha. You know, it's like when I was practicing Zen, I had so many problems, and I would always think, you know, I was going to graduate school, and graduate school is very difficult for me because I'm not a particularly, you know, I've met people who are genuinely brilliant people. I mean, they speak in complete paragraphs, you know, in multiple languages, etc. Even my teacher, Webb, you know, he speaks Japanese, he knows Chinese, he reads these things, you know. And he sent me a little letter about his adventures. He just came back from Japan. He was teaching at Bukyo University, and it was almost discouraging. It's like he ran into this Chinese person, and they talked all night in Mandarin, and then he ran into this, you know, and it's just, for him, it's just easy, you know. Meanwhile, I can barely speak English a lot of the time. So when I was going through my Zen practice and I was going to graduate school at the same time, I often felt inadequate. And I would go to graduate classes and just have this tremendous sense of stress. And I would think to myself, boy, oh boy, when I have Daikensho, no more stress. See? Yeah. And like anybody else, I had, you know, I was involved in a relationship with my wife that was difficult at first because I had a lot of baggage emotionally, like any other person. In fact, usually both people in a relationship do, right? My father was a very difficult person and a very unhappy man, and he left his mark on my mind. And my wife's mother was a very unhappy person, very difficult, and she left her mark on my wife's mind, you know. So you don't know these things, you just are in a relationship, and these strange impulses sweep over you, and then you're full of remorse and so on, and these strange things you can't explain, fears and anxieties, angers, you know, where are these coming from? So I would think, oh boy, when I have Daikensho, no more interpersonal problems, you know. And so on. When I have Daikensho, I'll be able to write my dissertation. I won't be such a dope, you know. And also you think, when I have Daikensho, I'll be Buddha. See? But this is not so. You know, if you practice wholeheartedly, you can have Daikensho. It'll happen. Just keep practicing. It will. But after Daikensho, you're not Buddha yet. See, not Buddha yet. And be careful of anybody who thinks he is or she is. See? If anybody ever tells you, I have eliminated all mental obstacles, all karmic obstacles, just listen politely, look for the door, get up, and run away. And never, never trust that person. Please. Very important. Because you will meet people who make that claim, and it's totally false. The Buddha was rather remarkable in that he achieved Anuttara Samyak Sambodhi. That is enlightenment without karmic remainder. No anger. No fear. Buddhists after his great awakening, no fear, no anger, just pure compassion. The goal is to be a being who is pure compassion. This is our goal. If we happen to be Buddhist, the goal is to be that being, a pure loving kindness, pure compassion, pure identification. And even after Daikensho, all human beings in the world today have residual anger, residual fear, residual lust, residual envy. There's nobody who of whom this is not true. And if somebody believes that he has had Daikensho and is freed from those things, that person is still blocking, still not facing reality completely, the reality of himself or herself. See, a person who has had deep awakening experience should be comfortable with the fact that he still or she still has imperfections. And the rest of your life is working on those imperfections, see, clearing away karmic obstacles. So this is another reason not to get too bothered if you feel that you haven't had Daikensho yet. Please don't get too upset about that, because once you have Daikensho, work is not over. You will indeed meet people who have had a great experience, gotten their Dharma transmission and so on, if that's what you're interested in. And then they've said, I'm done. And usually those people don't turn out very well. They often become very self-indulgent people. So it's important to realize the whole picture and say, I understand what awakening is, but I have a long way to go before I'm Buddha. See, so the goal is not Daikensho, the goal is Buddhahood. Awakened being who is completely compassionate. That's a perfect being. So many, from the Buddhist standpoint, takes many, many lifetimes. The Buddha had already had a Daikensho experience before, in previous life, before he became the Buddha, already ethically faultless. It takes a long time. Just keep practicing. But there's one other illusion about all this that I just wanted to talk about a little bit. Some people say, well, if everything is Buddha, why do I have to practice? Why do I have to practice if everything's Buddha? Well, the short answer is stop practicing and see if you feel better. Mm-hmm. And if you feel better, don't come back. But your experience would be very different from mine if that worked. Because I too have stopped practicing, didn't feel better, and came back and thought, I'm so glad this precious path is here. So that's the short answer. But the truth is, there are even teachers. There are even teachers in America who go around the country saying, you don't even have to do Zazen, see, because everything's already Buddha. And he said, if you sit on the cushion and you try to be Buddha, you're already creating a barrier. You'll hear that line from, there's some famous teachers in the United States who go around making this claim. You're already Buddha, you don't even have to practice. And if you do practice, you're already creating a barrier, a mental obstacle. My feeling is that those people may actually have had some kind of awakening experience, but they're still unclear about what it means. Because if everything is Buddha, you can't create an obstacle by sitting on a cushion. Right? You can't. Everything's already Buddha. So when you sit on the cushion, it's just recognizing your Buddha nature. Just recognizing your Buddha nature. It's the person who thinks that doing something like sitting, the person who thinks that doing something like sitting is going to divide him from the world is already living in a divided world. Another way to put it is like this, we're really not practicing because we want to wake up. We're really practicing because the enlightened part of ourselves is expressing itself. See? So there's a voice inside of you that tells you to do something, right? Sometimes, and you sometimes don't do it and feel bad. And there's a voice inside of you that says, do something, and sometimes you do it and you just feel so good, right? You know, we don't, the deepest decisions in our lives we don't make rationally. We try to find that voice in ourselves. You know, what should I do? You know, should I marry this person or not? You could make a mental checklist, but that's not how most sane people do it, right? You go deep into yourself, and at some point you know this is what I have to do. And if you do it, you have a real joy, real clarity, no obstacles, right? Lan Tian. So even though sitting might be difficult, even though you might have pain in your knees and in your back and wherever else you might have pain, some part of yourself has already told you to do this. And that's your enlightened mind. Yeah. And by doing it, I think you may feel better. Right? But it's like listening to that deepest part of yourself. Sometimes the deepest part of ourselves gives us instructions we don't particularly want. Right? This is a big problem. All right? Sometimes the true self says, don't do this, do that. And you think, the little part of your mind says, are you crazy? Right? I have a friend of mine who was offered a job at Princeton University. He teaches here at Rutgers, and Princeton offered him a job. He's one of these geniuses I was talking about. And periodically, Princeton just sends over like another enticement. You know, they'll say, come on over, you can have this salary. He never does it. And it's a mystery to people. Why doesn't he just go to Princeton? It's so much more prestigious. He'd have a... He knows his true self, you know. He loves it over here. He's comfortable over here. He feels connected over here. You know, he knows his true self. He's true to his true self. You know, some people might look at his case and say, that is really strange. You know, he's turned down the perfect job, you know, the most prestigious university, number one. Princeton sounds like number one. Turned down number one. You know, what could be wrong with this guy? But the true nature, his true self told him what to do. So, I've been talking for too long and people are squirming. and yet, you know, you're doing what your true nature told you to do. And that is already Kensho. That's already enlightenment. So, Yang Shan pointed to a snow line and said, is there anything that can go beyond this color? Yunmen said, at that point, I have pushed it over for him. He only knows how to push down. He doesn't know how to help others. One way to think about enlightenment is it's distant from everything around us. It's like, you know, snow is the absence of all color, right? It's the absence of all form. It's like pure absence, right? That's one way of understanding enlightenment. It's like a blank sheet, white sheet. Okay? But actually, all of these experiences, seeing a beautiful tree, listening to the birds at the bird bath, you know, eating a good meal, all of these are Buddha moments. Your heart is free, joy arises, compassion. See, all of these are the two sides of enlightened mind. Two sides. Both are Buddha. Both are Buddha. As you will see if you keep practicing. One knocks down, one sets up. Two sides, see? Mu is one side, sound of birds is the other side. Mu is one side, delicious soba noodles are the other side. See? These are the two sides of Buddha nature. Careful about transgression, he radiates benevolence. Courageous in action, he sees his duty. pure light shining in the eyes is like being lost from home. Pure light shining in the eyes is looking face to face at one aspect of enlightenment. Turning around in clear purity is, after all, another form of that state, the other side. Patchwork mendicants ultimately have nothing to rely on. Dying the same, born the same. Wherever you are, it's Buddha. Wherever you are, it's Buddha. News of warmth bursts the plum. Spring comes off the cold branches. That's a Buddha. Spring. Freezing gale makes the leaves drop. Autumn clarifies the runoff point. Autumn is also Buddha. So today you got up on this beautiful fall day and you came here to sit, and you might have no idea why you did it. And you can leave here and go, ah, another sit in which I did not achieve enlightenment. Neither of, you know, that's not so, not so. Today you listened to your true nature. It said, please get out of bed and go do zazen. Yes. And every minute of your sit is face to face with perfection. If you didn't feel it yet, don't worry, just keep going.